You're listening to The Goods with Dahlia Kurtz on News Talk 580 CFRA.
I dare you to sit there and not bounce around when you hear that song. So when I was a wee little girl, and we know I've always been wee, but as a little girl, my next guest inspired me to write one of my favorite poems I've ever written about a man named Joe. There wasn't actually a man named Joe, but it's very much about him. He represented many men and women. He represented our homeless, the people with the raw stories to share with the best insight on who we are. But not only did my next guest inspire me to write that poem, it also wrote part of my future in a way, because it got me to widen my perspective and approach social justice rather than just yelling at people about it through art. And then I end up incorporating so much of this Grammy award-winning guest's music into my show that my producer, Corey, jokes with me that his band, Arrested Development, should be my house band because I just play so much of their music. So I tell Corey, okay, I want you to book this man on the show. And Corey now thinks that I'm the one joking because he didn't think that it was possible. But impossible to me is just another way to say try harder. So Corey did that. And joining us right now, a rap legend from a group out of Georgia who hit the mainstream, becoming a household name with 1992's album, 3 years, 5 months, and 2 days in the life of music that is more relevant today than ever before. He's a pioneer of Southern hip hop musically and visually from the multi-million album selling group Arrested Development, Todd Speech Thomas. Good morning, sir.
Wow, was that ever amazing. Thank you. Good morning. How are you doing?
Well, you just used the word amazing, referencing something I said about you. So I think that you can figure how I'm doing right now. Thank you so much for taking your time to join us.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. It's definitely my pleasure. I actually stopped doing interviews. And when I got this one, I stopped doing interviews probably about 4 months ago. And not because of the COVID-19 pandemic or anything. And then I got this one. Mike sent it to me. And I said, you know what? I'll do this one. And I don't know why it was, but I said I would do it. And then we had confusion this morning when I said, I must have forgotten that I said I would do it. So I had to look at my calendar and realize that, oh, I actually did book this, but I forgot that I did. So it's good to join you this morning.
Well, and fun fact that I was actually tweeting with you as I was talking to another guest on air because I wanted to make sure that we got you on the show today. So it all worked out. I have so many things.
It worked out.
So many things I want to talk with you about, but before I get to any of them at all, I want to know about that scream at the beginning of Mr. Wendell. How did you get the idea to put that in there?
I think I was influenced by Prince on that, and there's a song he did called Get Off, and in the beginning of it, he just does this just outlandish scream, and I'm a huge Prince fan. It's my favorite artist, and I just wanted to, the song to me, Mr. Wendell, was so peaceful and so palatable and to some extent that I wanted to shake it up a little bit in the beginning and just sort of wake people up.
That is the best scream, because usually people have this sense of hesitation and they sort of hold back, but your scream just had so much in it. So
yeah,
I just had to ask about that. But I mean, looking back at everything that Arrested Development has done, you addressed subject matter that wasn't necessarily glamorous, but at the same time, you were looking at things in this positive light. That must have come to you intuitively. It wasn't a strategy, right?
No, it definitely wasn't a strategy. For me personally, I have deep thoughts about a lot of the issues that are going on in the world. I do feel that music is one of the biggest catalysts for change. I've always felt that way. And then also information, I always felt was a huge thing that gives people power. My mom is the owner of the largest black newspaper in Wisconsin. It's called the Milwaukee Community Journal. She's been owner of that since I was probably 7 or 8. So seeing the impact that it has on the community, seeing our conversations that we would have every, you know, time we would sit at breakfast together, and just the solutions that we were trying to come up with and dealing with the issues that the world was facing and the black community was facing in particular, I grew up with that feeling that music and input and information can change things, and it can make people think differently, including myself, obviously. So I just believed in that pathway.
You know, to say how, to reference your mom almost immediately before you reference anything else, my father, he himself had a voice and he had to fight for social justice. And oftentimes when people will ask me questions about things that I've done, I always go back to referencing him, the importance of, you know, our parents or whoever those people are who guide us from the time we're young. Not everybody has that privilege. And for you to be able to take that privilege and then put it into music and give it to people, that's a really big deal. And that's a big responsibility when it's gotten to the point where it is with you.
Well, you know, in my opinion, it's, I guess it is a privilege, and yet I feel like it shouldn't be. I feel like our role as human beings when we become parents is to guide our children and to help them to understand this world that we're living in and to best understand the world that we're living in. It ultimately is bigger than all of us, but my parents took that role on, and I feel like it's the right role for every parent. That's what I feel. And I wish every parent would take that upon themselves, because they have a great opportunity to have an influence on someone that really has a clean slate, which means your children can become the catalyst for change in this world. Your children can become voices that bring understanding and clarity to a world that often is muddy and confusing. So I think us parents, we have a great, 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 great opportunity to do that. And my parents did do that, and I would hope that it's not just a privilege, although I do understand many don't have that. I hope that people can start to see it as one of the birthrights of being a parent, in a sense, that you have that opportunity and take advantage of it.
It's one of the things that it is the thing that I appreciate most from my parents. I'm Dahlia. This is The Goods, and Speech from Arrested Development is with us right now. I want to talk about your voice and how you're using it now, but I also want to look back first at the work that you did, of course, with Arrested Development. And I'm sure that people will say to you right now, your music is more relevant now than ever before. But really, I mean, it was relevant way back when, and perhaps if people took heed and listened to it more and explored things the way you did, we wouldn't need it to be relevant right now, because we would have moved past a certain place. Where do you see your music fitting in the world right now?
Unfortunately, just like you said, it's still extremely relevant, and I wish it wasn't. I wish that it was a study of what needed to be said back in the 90s and no longer needs to be said now, other than a study of the past. You know, a lot of the same racial tensions, a lot of the same pathologies that are happening within the Black community, the same pathologies that are happening within the white community are unfortunately still there, and not just still there in a small sense, but are, when they raise their ugly heads, they're still hugely prominent as to what we're dealing with as a nation, and in many aspects, even as a world. You know, the death of George Floyd was a catalyst for protest. Here in the United States, we had the largest protest, but it grew into the largest protest, to my knowledge, across the planet Earth in the history of mankind since we've been recording these things. So I think that that goes to show that there is racial tension and racial realities that we really need to deal with, and urgently, across the entire planet. And if we don't start to deal with it with this great opportunity, with the death of George Floyd, then we'll just deal with it again in 10 years in songs or movements or sayings or things that are shown to be clearly relevant right now will unfortunately have to be relevant again in 20 years or 10 years if we don't deal with this.
Dealing with it in a healing way, in a positive way, I think this is a big force of your music. And just, I mean, looking at something like Mr. Wendell, for instance, just looking back at a song like that, the layers to it that not only come across musically and artistically, and it's really great to listen to, but learning the story of the song, learning the story of how the song came to be and learning the story of what the song did after, there's so much more to music and art than we actually see. Because, for instance, Mr. Wendell, I don't know if this is true, correct me if I'm wrong, but half of the proceeds that you got for that song, you gave back to a homeless initiative, a charity. Is this correct?
It is. When we first released Mr. Wendell, we knew, well, it was really something that I wanted to do. I knew that I didn't want to be a successful artist that did not make a tangible difference in the lives of people that I was talking about. And so I talked to the group, and all of us were down with this concept and this idea of giving, which is a huge deal, but giving half the proceeds,
yes,
of our money. And this is our first album, so we're not rich. We're not, you know, Beyonce or Jay-Z or anybody. We need that money, but again, the concept was, let's just give back to those that need it even more than us. And it's what I said in the song, $2 means a snack for me, but it means a big deal to you. And that's what we wanted to try to live out through this piece.
So, and this is a big part of it, because I see, you know, a lot of times people will say, I'm just a musician, or I'm just a that. It's not about just being anything. This is many things, because, for instance, you write the song, Mr. Wendell, you perform the song, you get all of these proceeds from it. You give a big chunk at a time when you guys weren't necessarily in a financial position to do that, back to a homeless initiative. And then if you go backwards even more and you rewind to the creation of that song, what led to that? I mean, the initial story in and of itself, where you are on, where was it, Edgewood, where you had this recording studio and you would meet people who were there and you would talk to them, people who typically weren't acknowledged. And by taking that moment to talk to these homeless people, the stories that came out of that and the way that you were able to affect people everywhere, from giving money to a charity, to getting people to buy your albums and listen to this story, to getting a little girl sitting in Canada to change her perspective about artistry and words and music and the power that she could have. So much came out of that one song, and you've done so much more since then.
Well, I love how you put that, and I agree with everything you said. It's amazing power that music has. You know, music has the ability to overcome or seep through the walls that many other mediums of communication can't do. Politics, a lot of times, puts people's walls up as opposed to tears them down. The borders and the barriers between nations sometimes put walls up, sometimes literally, other times figuratively, where music oftentimes tears those things down or seeps through those obstacles. And I've known that since the days of Bob Marley, who, similar to you, I listened to a man that's from Jamaica, Kingston, and a young boy in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, was moved deeply by him. I can mention a million other artists. He's just one that I just pulled out of my hat. But yes, these young people like myself, headliner, and a few others that didn't actually end up being in Arrested Development, but headliner was, myself was, and we used to sit in our studio in Edgewood in Atlanta, Georgia, which Edgewood just recently was a huge talking point because of a huge riot and shooting that just happened about a month ago. Anyway, in Edgewood, there was a lot of homeless people that were hanging around us all the time. And I say hanging around, they were around, and we would invite them into the studio and have conversations. And I love that aspect of just meeting people who get to see the more raw realities of human life. You know, a lot of us are in bubbles. We have a nice house to go to. We have the security of a job and income and so on and so forth. And these, a lot of the men that I was talking to, they got to see a more real side of humanity, the raw realities of how people treat you if you don't have something that you can offer them, the raw reality of what the systems ultimately do to people who do not have certain opportunities or have certain mental illnesses or for whatever reasons have fell just on bad times. These men that I talked to just had a very great philosophy about true human life, not what's necessarily being fed to us by sort of feel-good themes of life, but just what's real about life and also the good sides of it. Many of their stories were extremely heartfelt and warm about the humanity of people. So I don't know, it was just a great talk. And I found that those time periods for me were some of the most life-changing, and they continue to be. I continue, when I have time, to sit down with people who are in these predicaments, and I have some of the best conversations. So, yeah.
I'm Dahlia, and this is The Goods. We're having a conversation right now with Speech from Arrested Development. I had my Mr. Wendell, and his name was Southside Johnny, and he was probably one of the most intelligent people I ever spoke with. And he said something to me. It was a very simple thing that changed how I look at certain situations, because sometimes people will complain, you know, talk about maybe this homeless person stinks or something like that. And he used to reek, right? He had this horrible odor because he would have to urinate in his pants. But he explained to me that he did that because a man is most vulnerable when his pants are down. And to think, you know, now when I walk past somebody, if they have a certain smell, because I too, I'm around a lot of people experiencing homelessness, it's just you approach it in a different way. You talk to them in a different way. And these are the important conversations, not just with homeless people, but with, you know, people of all races and backgrounds and abilities. These are the conversations we need to have. And your music really, really promotes that, the power of art and words. Your mom must be so proud of you. I know you're doing so many things now too that we should talk about as well. And you've got your Everyday People podcast, and you've got new music, you've got your documentaries, and that first full feature documentary, 16 Bars, which takes you to prison in Virginia. You must have gotten way deeper than you imagined you would.
I did. And I saw a special on CNN about a jail in Virginia that had a daddy-daughter dance. And I said, wow, I just saw it and I was moved by it. It's a very beautiful story. And my manager called me and he said, Speech, have you seen this special on CNN? I said, yeah, I saw it. We started talking about what moved us about it. And one of the things was, whoever the sheriff was, this man must have had a really great vision for the humanity of these quote-unquote inmates or residents, as the sheriff that I would later meet said that they are. And the point was, you know, usually when people are in jail, they're known as monsters, they're known as the people that you stay away from, and they don't deserve any sort of comforts of family and so on and so forth. And this was way outside of just normal visitation. They were having a dance. It was a special dance where these men were able to literally just show their little daughters that they're princesses and they're incredible and special. And it's just a really moving piece. And so I called the sheriff. My manager did. He called the sheriff and asked if there was something that I could do. And in that particular jail, because this sheriff obviously had a vision for more humanity with these inmates or residents. And that's where it started. It took about two years to work through a lot of red tape and a lot of realities, legal realities about going into a jail, which most people don't want to do. And you don't go into jail purposely. People want to get out of jail. And so going in, writing music, and hopefully trying to sell it, all of that we had to get through the red tape of. And it took about two and a half years to do that. Once we did, I went in for about 10 days, and it was life-changing. It was beautiful. And it's meant a lot to so many people. So the documentary is called 16 Bars. It's on YouTube. It's on Vudu. It's on Amazon. I'm very proud of it.
And your latest documentary, The N-Word Factory?
I did. I've been in hip-hop for 30 years. And hip-hop music, I love it. It's changed my life. I'm a huge fan of it. And obviously, I'm an artist within it. And at the same time, hip-hop has become so much more than just an entertainment source for most Black people, not even in the United States only, but across the world. It's become the number one genre on the entire planet. And that's for all people, not just for Black people. And it's an incredibly powerful source. But I noticed that within hip-hop, a lot of the lyrics and visuals were becoming more like scripture to people. They were becoming mantras, things that they would live their life by, things that they would develop their worldview according to. And I wanted to study the impact of how hip hop had started becoming more and more decadent, more and more negative, more and more violent. And this documentary called The N-Word Factory is about that. And it goes further than just hip hop. So it doesn't blame everything on hip hop. This phenomenon has been happening before even TV began. But nonetheless, hip hop being as powerful as it is and being as influential as it is, and especially within the Black community, who many times, unfortunately, for numerous reasons that I can't get into all fully right now, only have one parent. That parent many times is working outside of the house and most of the day. And therefore, the children are relying on this music for more than your average entertainment that many other people are relying on this music for. And so the impact that it has on the mindset, the worldview, the trajectory of a person is much deeper than someone would normally think. And so this documentary covers that, and it talks about it. And people could see it on my website, brotherspeech.com. It's on YouTube. I gave it away for free. I spent a good amount of money making it, but I gave it away as really a conversation piece. And it's reached well over 1 million views throughout different platforms on social media. I'm proud of it.
I could talk to you forever. I have 1 million things. I'd love to talk about your conversations with Michael Stipe. I'd love to talk to you about everything throughout your career. But in our last moment that we have together, I want to find out this. Because a 3-minute song, a 4-minute song can have the same effect as an hour-long therapy session. Or it can have an effect to set you on a new trajectory in life. It could take you out of a funk. It could do some incredible things for you. So I want to know, Speech, what is that one song that you turn to maybe when you're down, maybe when you're elated, maybe when you need that extra little boost of therapy somehow? What is that song you turn to?
First of all, you're so right what you just said. And I love music for that purpose. And sorry I've been so long-winded on this interview. You've asked great questions and meaty
questions. You've given great answers.
Yeah, so sorry about that. But I would, obviously it's been many songs throughout my life, but one song that sort of comes to my mind is probably Rebel Without a Pause by Public Enemy. It when I first heard it, it jolted me. It's a very powerful song. It's a noisy song. It's a rebellious, screechy type of song. And yet, as a lover of hip-hop, it had great low end. It had great commanding voice from the lyricist Chuck D for Public Enemy. And the words mentioned certain people and movements that I never heard before. And the structure of the song was so unorthodox that it made me stop in my tracks, listen deeply to what was being said, and it set me on a course of trying to learn more about certain issues. And so that's one song, Rebel Without a Pause by Public Enemy.
Speech
was probably one of those songs.
You are just one of those people. You helped change a trajectory in my life and many other people's lives as well. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us today. I know you have your summertime anthem singing for the first time. So I actually did everything that I'm not allowed to do. And I kept our conversation going for twice the amount of time that it should have. And I'm not even going out on my song that I'm supposed to go out. I'm going to go out on your song, sir. So thank you so much. Speech from Arrested Development's. I appreciate you taking the time to join us today and to continue to use your voice and your power and even your money to help other people.
Same to you, sister. Have a fantastic day. God bless.
You too, sir. Thank you to my producer, Corey Price. Corey's getting a good gift for that one. And thank you to my guy in the controls, Callum Fraser. I am Dahlia. Say it forward. They cross our bed because you ground me. Times we share, I really want you around me.